Welcome to the Taylor Report, CIUT 89.5 FM. I'm Phil Taylor, your host. We're going to be speaking today with representative of the International Women's Network for Democracy, Marceline Duamungu. And this is a really important interview in our view because the Rwanda story is something the Taylor Report has focused on, and we want to go into that and this particular matter. And we'll also, of course, have something to say about the Meng Wanzhou story. And in the latter part of the program, we will speak to Tony Leah, who is with UNIFOR, and about the news from Australia about concerning the development of a decision to have nuclear submarines purchased by Australia, and part of the general buildup of a crisis regarding China. And the union movement there has spoken up. So we'll be talking to Tony Leah about that. Regarding the news, well, let's start with the, perhaps a story that our listeners haven't heard about, but it is a sad one, in my view. Colonel Theoneste Bagosora of Rwanda has died in a, he was in a prison, a UN facility in Mali. He's I believe he was 80 years old. He had been ill for some time. Bagosora is anyone who knows about the tragedy of Rwanda, and when we say tragedy, we mean by that the war years beginning in October of 1990, when Ugandan army elements under the lead of Paul Kagame, who was a Ugandan general, invaded Rwanda. And after that invasion, the characterization was that it was a civil war. It had after a establishment of a government made up of the opposition parties and the governing party, the MRND, there was to be an election, but there was, listeners will remember, the assassination of President Habyarimana and the chief of the Rwandan military. The fighting was resumed, and it was 3 months of warfare and massacres of civilians, and it was a horrific occasion. Following this, the United Nations decided there should be a tribunal to establish who had been responsible for the crimes against humanity committed in the year 1994. The name Bagosora, Colonel Bagosora, was put at the middle by Western media. They decided he was the villain. As Ramsey Clark and many others pointed out, it was a tribunal of victor's justice, and there's no longer an argument about that, because we now know, it's a matter of record, that the prosecution decided, didn't share this with the world, they decided not to prosecute anyone from the victorious side, that is to say the RPF, which meant it was what it said it would not be. I was in the courtroom and I heard the lead prosecutor say that this tribunal is not victor's justice. Well, when it was all over with, it turned out it was. That being the case, it means that it was not a proper tribunal. I believe if anybody convicted there was wrongly convicted, in that there was prosecutorial prejudice. They were not attempting to establish who was guilty of crimes against humanity in the period of the year 1994. Instead, they prosecuted one side. What do you know? The losing side. And Colonel Bagasora was a member of that. I think some good was done in the tribunal in the sense that if you were to go and read the testimony of Colonel Bagasora, and actually the testimony of some of the witnesses in his case, your idea of the reality of Rwanda 1994 would be dramatically altered. And let me give you a for instance. The prosecution said that the most important conviction at the tribunal was of the interim prime minister, Jean Kambanda, because Mr. Kambanda was brought into court and he made a pled guilty. And they said, see, that's the moment, because he was the interim prime minister and he entered a guilty plea. And therefore, that's all we needed to know, basically, according to the prosecution. But the prosecution to this day doesn't remind us of is that Jean Kambanda requested that he have a trial, that he be permitted to defend himself, because he said he had entered into a guilty plea, and anybody familiar with the courts of North America is very familiar with the practice. They negotiated with him certain modalities, and then those matters were not agreed to, were not followed up, not lived up to. And on top of that, he said he had never claimed to have special knowledge of any particular plan to cause massacres of civilians. He felt guilty because he, as the interim prime minister, it was his job to protect people, and he didn't think that he had done that, and he was prepared to say that. But when he realized what they were doing, and it was his presence there was symbolic, he asked to have a trial. Charles Roach, a noted Canadian lawyer, quite well known as a Pan-Africanist and an advocate in international cases of this type, said very clearly on several occasions, when you have charges as heavy and as serious, and with all the significant repercussions of genocide, crimes against humanity, no one should be permitted to simply say, I'm guilty, and then go away. The charge is too serious. Charles Roach said very clearly, when they have crimes of this magnitude are alleged, you have to test the evidence. It has to be clear what happened. But they were all very proud of themselves that they got Mr. Kambanda to enter a guilty plea, which he tried to reverse, which would have been to the benefit of us all, because then we could have had a trial and we could have heard witnesses and make up our own minds and et cetera. Here's another twist. Colonel Bagasora called Jean Kambanda as a witness. Jean Kambanda defended the record of Colonel Bagasora, said he had not committed crimes. He had no knowledge of any crimes committed. I remember one detail from the case that I heard very clearly. Kambanda said, because they were talking about how allegedly he was a powerful figure and he was the evil genius and all these things, and he was the mastermind. These phrases are used by Western journalists, none of whom speak Kinyarwanda, none of whom speak French, none of whom actually care. But they all decided on dirty words to attach to Colonel Bagasora. That Kambanda was asked, well, didn't the colonel come to see you I forget how many days after the assassination of Habyarimana, didn't he come and make demands on your government? Some such question as that. the key point is what his answer was. He said, yes, we saw Colonel Bagosora on one occasion. He met with us, not as a government. He said, I spoke to him with others, but he said he was asking to be restored to as an officer at a higher rank. And he was looking for, of course, greater responsibilities. We refused him. So try to keep the picture very clear in your head. To this day, they are going to use the word kingpin, mastermind, all those things. So the mastermind, the kingpin, went to a very weak, divided government and leader in John Kambanda and asked, could he have a higher officer grade and increase, of course, salary with that, and was told no. There are many other stories about the Bagosora case, which are to me outrageous, and I think our listeners should know about them. Colonel Bagosora has died in Mali. He was in a courtroom on a trial, which was frankly, victor's justice. And it behooves us all to work harder. The Rwanda story will never go away. It was too important. And it is being fought out today in the form of the arrest of a home arrest, I will call it, a Victoire Ingabire, a woman who returned to the country and was imprisoned because she wanted to run for president. And of course, Paul Rusesabagina was kidnapped. Canada lately has liked to talk about kidnapping, hostage, blah, blah. Paul Rusesabagina was kidnapped and delivered to the government of Rwanda, which you all understand is a one-man government. And all Canada could say is, we hope he gets a fair trial. They didn't say he should be returned. He should not have been kidnapped. That didn't come up.